This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, little Radiohead, Creep. Love that song. God, it's fantastic. Gord hates it, so.
I just said I don't like Radiohead. I never said I hated the song. I even said I appreciate their musicality. I just find it wanky and boring.
All right, fine.
Which is, I suppose, hatred. I guess.
Hatred.
When you really break
That's
it
what
down.
That is. It's hatred, Gord. Just
it's a year and a half I've been seeing Ben about once a week, and it's rubbing off on me.
All right, so so lots going on today. We'll get into some news a little later on. I've got a couple of messages. Do you want to hear some of those?
Yes, of course.
Mr. Schmangles. All right, let's go to Mr. Schmangles. Always fun. He says, hey, guys, who the hell runs in Joburg this early in the morning? Don't encourage that hobo guy to run to your studios. He might end up like Casper, naked and unconscious in the street.
Friendly and a ghost that everybody likes.
No, Casper De Vries.
Oh.
When are they going to announce the South African cricket squad for the World Cup, Ben?
Soon. April 19th, I think. I've mentioned it before, but today is 50 days until the World Cup, Gareth. 50 days.
Very good. You know what? It's also about 9 days until Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening in this world right now.
Mortal Kombat's coming out in like a week. Avengers.
I'll push it.
No, April's a cool month for cool shit.
Well, David Braz says, hey, Gord, there is no Fujin in Mortal Kombat 11. That pisses me off.
Fujin's a bit shit, though, and he kind of came and went for me. But, yeah, it would be nice to see with some more Elder Gods. There is a new female Elder God who controls elements. I forget her name, but she looks fucking hardcore.
I used to love Mortal Kombat.
Tattoos of Mortal Kombat. I love that shit.
I like the game as well, Gareth.
Scorpion on my arm, yeah.
Scorpion.
Yeah.
Get over here. Yeah. Fatality.
Yeah.
See, that was always cool because it was like back X. It was an easy move.
A lot of they keep the moves generally pretty easy. So I just want to bring up, are now a bit harder.
Like, so Mortal Kombat is so related to something that happened on Monday. We spoke to this woman about a game that she's trying to have banned because it's very violent. It sounds like a horrible game. But Mortal Kombat's a great example of what I was talking about on Monday when we spoke to her. This is a very violent game, but it doesn't make Gord go out into the street and try to rip off people's heads.
No,
and
it's
go,
cathartic, fatality. And it stops me from ripping off real people's heads because I can sever people in a video game.
So attach this to the conversation we had on Monday and even the continuation of that yesterday, and let's all just stop walking around with our heads up our backsides about games.
I'm not a big Fujin guy, just in closing on that. I'm not a big Fujin guy, but if Fujin makes it in, because we don't know the full roster yet, I won't go and write a paragraph-long rant under Mortal Kombat social media to, protest. It'll be cool. I'll just deal with it.
And DPWare says some very nice things. I've been listening to the show for 2 years straight. The knowledge I've acquired is priceless and much more than I would have got at university. Thanks, DPWare. I don't know if that's true, but thanks very much anyway. Anushka says, I agree, podcasts are the way. I started the MAP program through VITS in 2017 and passed with 85% in January by actually applying some of the principles I got in from your show. Wow, all right. Well, I'll tell you who is clever, is the guy we're going to talk to in a second, Riaz Muller. He is the CEO of a business called Hyperion Dev, and one thing we know for sure about living in 2019 is traditional jobs are being disrupted.
Yep, obsolescence.
That's right. Navigating what is next is like dancing on a moving carpet, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. There are training programs such as the Cogrammar Careers Program that have the potential to increase economic inclusion and growth by helping young talent to master skills that are in global demand. See, that's essentially the most important thing, that you're studying something that is in demand. Studying feminist dance theory is not going to guarantee you a job, but if you can do coding, you probably have
assembly
a
line production is going to not do well.
Well, if you're interested in finding out a little bit more, you're in luck because Riaz Muller is going to join us in a second. He is the guy who's putting together a course which may be very, very interesting to some people. I think it certainly will be. Cogrammar are South Africa's largest provider of IT education. They've launched the Cogrammar Careers Program in partnership with Cape Town-based NGO Silesian Life Choices. Their quest is to create 200 jobs by the end of 2020. And rather than graduates getting jobs elsewhere, Cogrammar hire them to become full-time code reviewers with them. While employed by Cogrammar, they work to power tech education in places like Undela, Lambda School, and Code Academy in the US. So, Riaz, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm just in California at the moment. How are you, Gareth?
I'm very, very well. Last time I saw you was in California. No, I have seen you in Joburg since then. What are you doing back there now?
Well, I'm here to attend a EdTech conference called ASUGSV. So just been meeting with some of our clients, met with Code Academy today, Lambda School, 2U, the people that bought Get Smarter. And mm-hmm. so we're structuring new integrations for kind of code reviewers from South Africa to work on new projects with these clients in the US.
So tell me quickly about the Code Grammar initiative and what this tuition-free six-month on-site coding is all about.
Great. So basically what we've designed is a new career path for people to become essentially copywriters for code, experts at kind of reviewing other people's code and understanding deeply where there are errors in code and where code can be improved. And that has applications in all types of places. So the first place is developer education, working with people like Code Academy. We obviously scale how they provide feedback to their students, mm-hmm. but also developer assessments. When a company wants to hire a software developer, they test them, and basically they send them a coding test. We review the results of that test to tell them how good a candidate is. So the Co-Grammar Careers Program is really a six-month, full-time, on-site program that's designed to prepare people to become kind of co-grabbers or copywriters for code. So it trains people in kind of advanced technical skills, but also this code review skill set. And after 6 months, we employ graduates to work full-time with us doing code review for these partners in the US and Europe.
Sounds fantastic. Unfortunately, time is not on your side if you want to join up, because apparently the applications close on the 15th of April. And you're looking for particularly, what, 18 to 25-year-olds?
Yeah. In this cohort, we're only able to accept people that are younger than 25 years old. But in the next cohort we'll be running in September, we aim to bring that age limit up. But for now, we're targeting youth, people who may have some technical skills, or some people who may have no technical skills at all. So no kind of background at all is required for this program. But we do close applications this Friday, I believe. And we're looking for the most talented, the most ambitious youth in South Africa who want to go down this path of being expert code reviewers. Think of it as a specialized type of software engineering. You know, it's a new skill path we're creating, and we're very excited to work with the most talented tech youth out there.
That sounds amazing, but just to reiterate, you don't need to have done any coding before. You don't need to be hugely technically advanced in order to try and apply for this, right?
No, definitely not. So as with all our programs we've run at Co-Grammar and our sister brand, Hyperion Dev, mm-hmm. We want to bring opportunities to people who have no technical skills. And at the end of the day, we believe that anybody in the world can become a software developer or code reviewer. This isn't some type of kind of particularly special skill set. It does require somebody who's passionate about the field and who can think logically, but I believe, and we believe, that the vast majority of people out there can think in that way. So we leave our applications and processes open to anybody at all. As long as you can solve the challenges in our application processes, we can accept you for our program.
So Riaz, just so people understand your own background and where you are at the moment and what your businesses are up to at the moment, give us a very brief appraisal of your own history in coding, your own business history, just so people have some idea.
Yeah, well, a little bit about myself. I'm from South Africa, but I was very lucky to study in the UK, where I studied artificial intelligence and machine learning at the University of Edinburgh and the University of Cambridge. I worked as a product manager in the Google search team, where I used artificial intelligence to power some of Google search. And in that process, I learned the power of humans. Machines and artificial intelligence will never really replace humans. And so that's why I decided to go full-time running what is Co-Grammar today. We were funded by Facebook and Google in 2016 to basically design a system for taking African talent and kind of scaling them to power services around the world. And it took us a few years to work out how that works, basically in kind of mid last year, we rebranded from Hyperion Dev to Cogrammer to focus fully on code review as a service. And so now we're a team of 103. We provide code review to kind of the leading tech education and development brands around the world. And we also run Hyperion Dev, a sister brand of ours, which is the largest tech education provider in South Africa. But at the end of the day, we've learned a lot over the years, and we've learned the value and potential of South African talent. And we really believe what we're doing is exporting South African talent to around the world to power some of the world's leading kind of tech education and assessment platforms.
I think this is absolutely amazing. You can go and find out more at Cogrammar, that's cogrammar.com/apply. Put that in, so it's cogrammar.com/apply, and you can complete the compulsory assessments online. And if you feel like becoming someone who can export your skills, as Riaz says, to the rest of the world, find yourself a hugely relevant place in the future economy, then this is probably the best way to get a foot in the door. Riaz, congratulations on the work you've done so far. Good luck with this new program, and let us know in time how well it goes and how many people you've managed to get through.
Thank you so much, Gareth.
Very
Have a good day.
Lovely to talk to you. That's Riaz Mulla, who's the CEO of Hyperion Dev and Cogrammar. Very, very cool, huh, Gord?
Isn't Sounded like he said that we'll always need people to drive the robots.
Well, that's a discussion for when he isn't on Skype in California one of these days. We'll hopefully get him in here to talk about it, because Riaz is really...
He sounded pretty adamant, even though he kind of moved on from that point quickly, but that robots, the AI and stuff... We'll never replace humans.
Let me tell you something. This guy is so... you know, you sit in a car with some people, and we were on a bus together going from place to place in Silicon Valley. I found Riaz was intimidatingly smart.
Yeah. Yeah, some people are like that.
And in a very unpretentious way. Like, he's not trying to impress anybody, certainly not going out of his way to patronize anyone, but just one of those people who lives... in a world so advanced that most of us...
You get people that make you realize that, like, you don't know how much you don't know.
Absolutely. That's true for him.
I wish Silicon Valley was a place where everyone just had huge tits. They should make such a place.
You mean Silicon Valley as opposed to Silicon Valley?
Yes, perfect. Let's make that place. You don't have to think too much about AI and programming if you live in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. All right, you want to know about some things? First of all, here's Carl, who has emailed us and said, "Hi, I earned an undergrad in industrial psychology, but I've never used it. I started a business with a friend that has nothing to do with what I studied. I rarely ever look at a potential staff member's qualifications when hiring, and we employ 120 people."
Nice. Well, muzzle on the employing people too, man. That's also a hell of a thing.
Not good. It's very impressive.
Go study, don't use it, start a business, not using your studies, and employ a whole shitload of people. It's pretty. That's like a whole argument in favor of what you were saying earlier, wrapped up right there.
It shows you what you can do.
Yeah.
You don't need all this.
It's not to say nothing against studying, of course.
No. But point is, there's
you can get around it with the right podcasts and that kind of stuff.
There's no institutional or structural obstacle to you becoming successful. You are the only obstacle.
And knowing about space.
All right. Taryn Turner, who emails us regularly, says, "Hey guys, we just had a very unsettling experience. Our gardener is Malawian. He left work as usual, but he called my husband about half an hour later saying he didn't know where he was and that he needed help. He'd been picked up by two guys in police uniform in a white van, in his words, a civilian car, not a police car. They asked for his passport, which he didn't have on him. He does have one, though. They said they'd take him to the station, which he agreed to, and said he'd get a friend to bring his passport to him there. Then the one said they were going to search him. They took his cell phone and his money. Drove him to South Coast Road and told him to get out. He asked them to take him to the police station, but they pushed him out of the car and drove off. He had no clue where he was, just that he could read the street sign that said M4 and a business sign saying Super Tire. When I went to fetch him, he looked broken and dejected, but at no time was he surprised, which was the saddest thing to deal with for me and my children who were there. I felt embarrassed to be South African, even though the criminals obviously don't represent us as a nation, or me personally. That xenophobic sentiment is very much out there. As I say, just unsettling to brush up against someone else's everyday reality, and a reminder to focus on empathy and gratitude."
Yeah, preying on the weakest. That's when it's the worst.
Yeah, this whole xenophobic thing, we've unpacked it once or twice on the show. It's just, it really is very, very broken people taking that out on people who are even more broken than them, and very often people who just don't have the strength of the law behind them.
Yeah, can't fight back.
Can't easily
victimized. It's the worst kind of being a derse. If you're going to be a derse, at least like be a sporting derse and don't pick on those people who can't fight back.
Here's an interesting discussion. So Leanne Moll mentioned something called a ticky box. Do you know what that is?
That's a payphone that takes a ticky.
Well, right. Ben and Sia didn't believe such a thing existed. So this
and they
is
had
from
that like orange round. It was like encapsulated in. It looked like, you know, those hair things old ladies put on them, like a big one of those, but sideways, and they were orange. And then you also occasionally got cream colored ones, and they'd be in like a little row, and it went tick 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 when you were phoning. And I always thought that was why it was called a ticky box. But apparently, it's because it used to take a ticky when we were on the British currency system.
This is it. So this comes from Tampa in Florida, from George. He says, the ticky box discussion on Monday brought back a whole lot of memories to this old fart, so I thought I'd educate you all as to how these things worked back in the day. Before rands and cents, South Africa had pounds, shillings, and pence, a.k.a. British sterling. There were 12 pennies in a shilling. 20 shillings made a pound.
Ah, the imperial system.
There we go.
And a clervoet was 14.5 numdis.
We had 10 pounds, 5 pounds, and 1 pounds, and 10 shilling notes. As for coins, we had silver and copper coins. I remember having crowns and half crowns, shilling, sixpence, and the indomitable ticky.
Somebody took acid and made that system.
So apparently, the crown was 5 shillings, and a half crown was 2 over 6 D. And I don't know,
you need an equation to work out what your currency adds up to.
I swear to God, this is why South Africa's
economy... Let the shilling equal X.
Yeah, I mean, this makes no sense. Copper coins were pennies, half pennies, halfpennies.
Isn't a half penny and a halfpenny the same thing?
Sorry, yes, correct. Halfpenny. And farthings... So 2 farthings make a halfpenny, 4 farthings make a penny.
So a farthing is a quart penny.
But wait, it gets worse.
So this dude actually, you had to know this.
Yeah, this is how you made it on the street. But wait, it gets worse, George says.
Imagine trying to buy weed and get change. I'd be like, I don't know if I'm paying you or you paying me. I can't give you change for a quatrain because it's 18.7 clervets, and a clervet is equal to one half of a penny. Fuck off.
You've been to Europe, though, and you take out euros, and you're not always sure whether you're getting the right change, and that's in metric. That's not even in imperial.
I manage with the euro change system. You just look at the number on the piece of paper.
But it's still complicated.
But you're not used to the coins, I think, is maybe the point you're making.
That's the problem.
It's like you get used to them by feel and weight and size.
So apparently in 1961, the apartheid government decided to change from the pound sterling to rands and cents. So imagine a 12-year-old, which is what I was, being a little bit confused. But there was a solution. His name was Decimal Dan, the Rand Cent Man.
Oh my God, was there a Decimal Dan, the Rand Cent Man?
Yes, and they've actually attached a YouTube video of Decimal Dan.
Oh my God. I bet you it's bad, though.
Okay, so listen to this. Here it is. This is how it all goes for people who didn't understand how to deal with the change in currency. All right? Dan Hill and his orchestra. Decimal Dan says, spend your old coins first.
Dan, the Rand Cent Man, gives you cents for pennies whenever he can. 1 cent for a penny and 2 for 2.
And 2 and a half for a ticky.
And notes and silver are worth the same.
Remember, it's just a change in their name.
Decimal Dan, the Rand Cent Man.
The Rand Cent Man.
That's fucking fantastic,
yeah,
isn't it?
That sounds to me like the Rand is actually the Rant. And it's not just something old people say to be hateful and make times when they're looking after you boring and terrible by saying yogurt and runt. It's actually what they call that us rand saying folk are wrong. Heathen young people screwing with tradition.
Decimal Dan does it, then that's the nurse, the authority.
Decimal Dan, the runt sent man. Right. Why didn't they just spell it R-O-N-T?
3 cents.
Cents are worth a sixpence.
And notes and silver are worth the same.
Remember, it's just a change in their name.
Just contradicted the shit out of himself. It's 1 for 1, 2 for 2, but 5 cents are worth a sixpence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you screwing people who have sixpences, they should get 6 cents for that. Fuck you, Decibel Dan, the Rod Sept man. You're just trying to swindle children.
Are you going back in time now to 1961 where you're going to tell Decibel Dan how it really should be?
Yeah.
I hope all we did with children was give them bad financial advice.
Yeah. One is for one and two for two. It's a straight exchange. It's nothing new. Except if you've got 5 cents, then you get a sixpence. Fuck you too from Decibel Dan.
It's a very catchy song. I think Gord's reworking of it could be quite a hit. All right, hang on. Wait, there's more.
Decimal Dan, the Ron Cent man, gives you cents for pennies whenever he can.
I love this. I think this is the best thing ever. This is obviously paid for by government to try and get people to understand.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's of the time, so that sort of style of music and saying "ront" it was probably pretty cool. I miss the jingle as an advertising staple.
Everything was
staple.
A jingle.
Yeah. Like the sound mnemonic now in advertising is a vibe, like "di-di-di-ding," or like, you know, "dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun." But the actual like cool song that got stuck in your head as a kid and you'd walk around school singing the Simba Chippy song,
yeah,
like that's a lost art. Now what they do is they do shit rap. I'm so cool. When I go to school, I'm no fool. Mum made me sandwiches. Albany bread. Shoot me in the head till I'm fucking dead. Like they do shit rap and contrive. Like they try to do pop music. But whatever happened to like some big theatrical bombastic?
Yes,
I want to be a Simba Chippy.
Or Decimal Dan the Ront Cent Man.
The Ront Cent Man.
So listen, George, you've made our morning. This
yeah, George
is
rules. George Can George from- possibly explain? If he's listening, etc., why you got one for one, two for two? It's a straight exchange, but 5 cents is worth a sixpence. Is sixpence not actually worth sixpence? And if not, how the fuck five and six?
You know what, Gord? You're the only person in the whole world who cares.
But you brought the topic up.
No, Decimal Dan brought it up.
6 for 7 pence, 7 for 8,
and 7.5 for 9 pence.
Why does he sound like he was dropped at birth? Sounds like he got dropped nuts. I mean, she's great.
And then Decibel Dan, the background. Well, that's why he's giving you 8 for 9.5 pence. He's like, starting at this, his exchange rates are completely random.
She sounds great, but Decibel Dan bothers you. Because he's got a bit of a slur.
It sounds like he's not into it. He's like, oh, is there something wrong with him?
Well, his math sucks.
Is there a picture of Decimal Dan?
Yes, yeah. He's wearing a hat with a big R on the top.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He looks like Mr. Min on all of the hallucinogenics.
Okay, so he's not actually... He's like he's a made-up character.
Also, like, where were good cartoonists?
No, they didn't have any in those days.
And apartheid, you had to draw with the opposite hand. Yeah. It was no fun or brilliance.
You had to oppress your drawing hand.
Yes, you oppress your talent.
Well, if you want an explanation of decimal coinage, there's some very interesting stuff. you remember that newsreel they used to have? Well, obviously, none of this was around before we were born, but it was called Pathé. Right? And
they
used to make these bum ba da bum ba. Here is an official news network broadcast for all those people who wish to be in the know.
Dude, that's beautiful. Right? Please, can you do the news like that from now on?
Johannesburg, one of the golden cities of Africa. From here comes much of the world's gold, valued at millions of pounds. But they don't talk much in terms of pounds anymore in South Africa. They've moved on to the decimal coinage system a few years before Britain is expected to. What is happening to money in South Africa?
By the way, Britain never did.
Never did, yeah.
And what is happening in South Africa?
...of importance to us, since we can learn some valuable lessons. The decimal system means that instead of 12 pennies to the shilling and 20 shillings...
Oh, here we go. Oh, God. Get ready for your brain to explode again. Gord's going to complain about how sixpence isn't five.
Just quickly take my acid and wait for it to kick in before you play the rest of this.
Everything works in tens. They now have the rand, equal to 10 shillings and cents. For the time being, price tags are marked old and new style as the old notes are slowly withdrawn.
Huh.
Do you think people spoke like that? Like, as a professional broadcaster, I have to speak like this. But do you think you also spoke like you'd be like walking and run into your friend and be like, oh, hello, Ben. Welcome to South Africa, where you are having a lovely time on your motorcycle.
I just think everyone spoke normally until you had that music in the background, and then they became broadcasters.
But you get also the same thing in like American news where it's like, and in the news today, and that like you have to speak like a derst to broadcast.
But that's how it's always been. Broadcasters sounded different, otherwise they didn't have credibility.
But I saw a friend of mine who I haven't seen in a very long time on the news, and it sounded like he was having a challenge. He was either having a stroke, fourth phase four piles. he was going through a tough time.
He was pushing through the broadcast despite probably should have stayed at home.
You know, but I guess, I mean, look, I've got a bit of a speech impediment thing, so I try to emphasize things to slow my speech down to make sure that I can sound, you know.
Mm-hmm. You speak well for a person with a speech impediment.
Yeah, I try to manage it.
What's your speech impediment?
You don't seem to have one at all. I'm serious. Not even giving you shit.
I stutter a lot. Sometimes I actually battle to start sentences, as in the first word doesn't come out, so you just sit there and wait for it.
Okay.
It's very
you have any secret speech
you've gotten
impediment
on top of that one.
But, I mean, when you're in broadcasting, obviously people tend to speak in a certain way in order to actually then just sound coherent.
I suffer from ebullient persiflage. Do you guys remember GST?
Like general sales tax.
And it was like a random percentage. I think it was like 11% or something. So it wasn't even just easy to do the maths. And you're like 6 and you've got pocket money and you want to go buy Warhead sour sweets. And you're like, hello, Mrs. Lady of the Shop. How much is this actually? Like, here's my money on the countertop. How many of these can I buy? Because the price is a fucking clue. It's not a price. It's like, oh, Frankie, a clue. This is R2.94. Oh, how much is that really? Oh, that's R3.16, Gordon. Thanks, Scooby, the Ron said dog. Fucking GST. Like, and they changed to VAT. It was like, okay, this is obvious that it should always have been.
I remember the actual campaign. The price you see is the price you get.
Yeah, like, why did you ever have?
Why the fuck was this never the first thing we did?
Okay, we're going to put on tax, but you have to math it yourself. Like, the shop are not responsible for the mathing.
I think it was to confuse people. I mean, this is what we did. So just to go back to Gord,
people just accepted it. They didn't just go to the Houses of Parliament with a sign saying "stupid." Stop it.
Gord, like that way they used to do the news. I found a clip from 1922, all right, about Queen Mary.
Yeah. Her Royal Highness to you, Gareth.
Listen to this. So this is brought to you by the British Board of Film Censors.
The most fun people in the world.
But they were also the guys who checked that the news was appropriate. You know, I mean, we don't realize how far we've come.
Can you imagine the Board of Censors being in this broadcasting chamber?
They would all tear their hair up.
They would just execute us all. We'd be like guillotined in the room.
Yeah, or they'd jump out of the window. They wouldn't know what to do. All right,
that's outrageous, Gareth. You can't think that.
Yeah, listen to this quickly. All right, the British Board of Film Censors.
1922.
This is to certify that this has been passed for general exhibition. This is the music. Fantastic. Imagine if they still did the news like this.
I feel soothed.
And by the way, these used to show before movies because they didn't have television in those days. So the news you would get would be from the newspaper or you'd go to the cinema.
Yeah, they'd start movies with a news broadcast. The boys at the front are holding the line.
There we go.
Spirits are high in the war. This man has no legs, but he still loves Britain. Look at him, still being happy. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't miss his testicles because he knows they went to freeing Britain.
Look at him, stick it to the jetties with just his one arm.
He took his testicles and threw it at a German. That's the kind of fighting spirit we have here in Britain.
You've got it exactly right.
A week and a half ago, the football team that you support won, and it was a jolly time. That will be the football news for the next 6 months.
So they would show this before the cinema, right?
So often have we seen Queen Mary in the magnificence of her old age...
Magnificence.
...that we almost forget how lovely she'd been when she was 19.
So basically, Queen Mary mings a lot now, but when she was young, she was a fucking belter. Translating.
Princess May was singled out by Queen Victoria to marry the heir to the throne.
So that Bennett May, she had to marry the Oak for the good of the family, China. She didn't dig him, but it was marriage.
60 years ago, she became the bride of Prince George of Wales. King George V and his Queen Mary came to the throne in 1910.
So basically, we had to pick somebody to marry that Oak.
Yeah.
And he's giving the historical recount of what happened with the royals.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about someone else's family.
It's just unbelievable. Like, this used to be what people got as the news. This was, my great grandparents would have thought this was like breaking
news.
Normal
as hell, yeah.
And they would have to wait another month or two for an update on, you know, Queen Mary or the what's going on with the boys at the front.
Magnificence of Queen Mary. I mean, we forget that even though she's an old minger now, she belted hard in her youth. Man, would we have loved to have given her one then.
That's so hilarious. Oh, my God.
The family had to choose someone to marry that guy. So they chose May. Poor thing. She's getting rooted in weird ways, but we don't talk about that sort of thing.
All right, let's get Hobbo in here. Where's Hobbo?
I'll go fetch him.
All right, the recently published Global Wellness Index put our alarm bells on. We found out that South Africa scored really poorly for life expectancy, for alcohol use, depression, and for diabetes. And when stacked up alongside the G20 nations and the 20 most populous countries on Earth, South Africa, once a shining beacon of economic growth, came stone last. Now, to raise awareness and combat this, premium health and wellness brand Biogen, in conjunction with Retroactive, which is Ben and Mike Sharman, they're doing, I suppose you could call it an interesting experiment, but they're also kind of documenting someone's journey here. James Hobbo Hobson has been on a transformative experience of weight loss. Hobbo's on his way from 130 kilograms to aiming to complete the Durban 70.3 half Ironman in June of this year. It seems like an audacious goal to achieve, but this is one that showcases exactly what more of us need to know. Authentic wellness needs to be a priority for all of us. Leading a healthier life is achievable. So, Hobbo, welcome, dude.
I feel like you need theme music, bro.
Hello, Mike Sharman. How the hell are you?
Fantastic, and you? Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Sharmanator's here, too. All right, so Hobbo, first of all, welcome to the show. I feel like I know you because I've been watching all these videos of you waking up at ungodly hours and going for runs and shit.
Yeah, pretty much.
It sounds like it's been, it's been an interesting journey, but it's also been very difficult. You've had Ben following you around with a camera, which can't be pleasant.
Filming him.
That's probably the worst part about it, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if you don't keep moving, I'm going to have conversations with you.
Exactly.
Well, it's sort of like,
I'll catch you and have conversations.
It's kind of like keeping up with the Kardashians, except it's Hobbo.
Keeping up with the Hobsons.
Yeah.
So, all right, so Hobbo, first of all, you started at 130 kilograms. How the hell did you get to 130 kilograms?
Living the good life, I suppose. Well, the old good life.
What was the? Were you eating
alcohol,
a lot,
food,
drinking a lot?
Love food. Okay. Love the odd night out and whatever with the boys. But yeah, and sort of cut that back now.
And were you plucked from obscurity by Mike Sharman because he has a vindictive streak, or because he actually thought you would be a great example of what we can do if we all get our lives together and kind of be more conscientious about what we eat, exercise, what we drink, how we can do interesting things, incorporate like healthy stuff into our lives and make our lives better and lose some weight at the same time?
I think it's just love.
You think it's love? Yeah, I think it might be vindictive.
No, it's all set with good intentions. I took Hobbo to the worst experience of his life about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
What was that?
We went to a nutritionist, and she wanted to make him eat like pea-sized portions 6 times a day. And he was like, not a chance. I'm not going down that route. So we quickly lost that opportunity. And then about a year and a half ago, we met Brandon Fairweather, who's the marketing manager of Biogen, and said to him, like, we have a really out there kind of concept. We're going to pitch it to you. And I said, Hobbo, listen, I'm using you as the guinea pig. Sorry, man. I'm going to just send me some pictures. I had a picture of him when he was 18 and a current picture.
Sure.
And
some of these pics weren't overly flattering.
Well, he's guinea-sized now.
He's never going to see it. He's never going to see the pitch deck because it seems a little bit harsh. But, yeah, we pitched it, and we said, here's Hobbo. He's a foil for South Africa's health issues, and we want you to be the brand that helps power him over the finish line. He's never run a 5K before, and we're going to get him over the finish line at the half Ironman. And when you look at it on paper, it's intense. And even today, we still don't know if he's going to finish or not. Like, that's what creates the drama.
Okay, so this is a real-life drama playing out. Ben has been documenting part of this journey as well, and that means like a lot of intimate kind of getting into Hobbo's space, getting into his life, getting into his food, recording stuff. Most of us don't want this stuff to be published.
Yeah.
You've got to be tough as nails to let these people take advantage of you like this, Hobbo, because they come in, they film you fucking eating, they film you running. This is none of, most of us would not want people invading our space like this.
You definitely wouldn't.
It's brave of you.
Can I just reel this back a little bit, okay? Because the guy's life is changing for the better here. We're taking him from a place where he was not on a good trajectory.
He's taking himself and you documenting it, Ben.
But the whole thing is, it's like we are trying to find the positives from these things. So we don't often, I don't invade him in his private time. It's very well managed. But it's about making sure that we always have relatable content. So if you're in a position just like Hobbo, looking to change things.
And a lot of people who are.
There's a lot of people like that, of course. So what we're doing on behalf of Biogen is saying, like, this is what wellness can be. So I structure this with Hobbo, and we look at it in a certain way. So I say, like, what are you doing this week? And you'd be like, well, I'm going for a run here. I'm cycling here. I'm seeing this person, that person. And a cool thing is that throughout this whole process, Hobbo has been around these different professionals in different things, from nutrition to biokinetics to coaching.
You've had access to some experts the rest of us wouldn't normally have. That's obviously helped as well.
So we have made it kind of fun for him, because every time he's doing these things, again, no, he's not smiling right now. Every time he does these things, it is taking him further because he's learning something new as well. So it's not just like, you know, me putting a camera on him.
So, Hobbo, what's been the best and worst experiences you've had over this period so far? And you've obviously still got a way to go, but so far.
Oh, the worst is probably the sort of eating. I think, you know, I loved my food and I still love my food, and it's being very conscious about what to eat and how much to eat and things like that. I mean, that's been probably the toughest thing. That's more of a mental thing than just going and banging out 5Ks, you know. That's,
I don't know, dude. I mean, like, I can't, I did a race of 3Ks once and I felt like I was going to die, and the idea of having to do that again would be like being sent to a Vietnamese prison. I think that that's the bravest part of this. And I see you running in these videos that they've made. Hashtag Biogen Journey, by the way, if you want to find them. They're all over social media and on YouTube. I see you running on these things, and you look like you're actually having a good time.
Yeah, I think that's just smiling for the camera because Ben's saying something stupid.
Oh, right.
What's the superior editing?
running is the worst part of the exercise. I was a swimmer in the good old days, and I sort of don't mind the swimming.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of the guys struggle. I've got a few mates doing this 70.3 with me, and they're battling with the swimming at the moment.
Hey, did you hear about those two people who died in the Ironman?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to be careful. You can't just take to this and think that it's easy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of guys, they jump into the sea for the first time doing one of these triathlons. They've never swum in the sea. They've literally swum at the gym and watched the lanes. Yeah. Or they've swum in a lake or a river. And swimming in the sea is a completely different level. Jeez, I mean,
it's trying to wrestle you to death while you swim in it.
Yeah, 3 years ago,
it's like swimming in a million wrestlers.
It's like swimming upstream with little thousands of big, large salmon all climbing all over you.
Morning salmon, even, which are the best kind.
And that's the thing, is like, you know, people get into the sea, they had to cancel the swim a couple of years ago in Durban and change the course because even the pros were getting pulled out with jet skis. Like, it was just so intense. And that's the thing, is like, if anyone's doing this for the first time, like, they actually have to be aware of, like, what is the sea like? How does it feel? Because people panic and then their hearts redline, and that's kind of what happens to a lot of these guys for the first time in the sea.
Yeah, but saying that, even in the gym, I mean, there was a guy pulled at the gym.
Yeah, by the cleaner. Nice. There was a video that's going viral. Yeah, like this cleaner was just sweeping, and then some dude was doing laps, and the next minute he just started drowning, and the cleaner jumped in and saved the dude. So,
and there's only like one third of the pool where you can't just stand. Like, I mean, it's only the end, but like, you just stop swimming and stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah, shame, but not in the sea, you don't have that.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I'm quite confident with that, which is a good thing.
All right, so how do you get down from 130 kilograms? Give us a basic gameplay here, because we can see the videos to get the specifics, but you know, all of us are, without, you know, with a very few exceptions, let's say, most of us are unhappy with our appearance. Most of us want to do something, even if it's just shed a couple of kilos. Maybe it's a whole lot. Maybe we want to just get a bit fitter, feel a bit better. So how did this even begin for you, and where do you go?
So I mean, I think a huge thing is in nutrition. I was eating a lot of crap, burgers, pizzas, you know, a lot of carbs, which is not great for, I suppose, most people, but I mean, not everyone. Some people can eat carbs.
Yeah, sure.
But also was the amounts of it, you know. So essentially, it's calorie deficit. So I was put on a program where I'm on intermittent fasting, so I don't eat for 16 hours in the day, which sounds hectic, but it's not really. You know, if you eat at 6, 7 in the night, at night, then you're eating 11, 12 the next day, or 12, 1
o'clock. It's not so bad. People can do that.
Yeah.
I think I'd do that anyway.
1/3 of the time you're eating and 2/3 of the time you're not.
Yeah, essentially. But, okay. I mean, I generally didn't eat huge amounts in the morning anyway, so that hasn't been a massive change, and I'll have a coffee in the morning, which is fine. But it's also watching what you eat. You know, like we've replaced at home pasta with zucchini noodles and butternut noodles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
To try to cut the carbs out. I mean, that's made a huge difference. And then obviously the exercise. You know, I'm exercising probably anywhere between 1 and 3 hours a day. Six days a week. So I get one day off so I can still play golf on a Saturday. But
which I also is think pretty it's exercise-y as well. Yeah. I mean, golf, you walk a lot.
Yeah. But you know, it's not getting your heart rate up and things like that.
Also, so. I think it's his consistency. I mean, he's done it in 24 weeks, so it's been
pretty impressive.
It's been a 6-month thing, you know. Like, and I think so many of these stories tell this, like, it's typical brand of 2019: leverage an influencer, tell the story, get on the cover of a fitness magazine. With Harbo, he's a regular guy. He's not an influencer. He's a regular human
being.
But
this is why I'm kind of impressed with Biogen that they got this. So what is their involvement here? I mean, what did Biogen actually do? I don't know a lot about the company.
Yeah, so it's an in-house brand for Dis-Chem, and it's a supplement brand, and they really are dedicated to. They don't want to just make you club gym butts, and like as Gord will talk about, like just. Get massive muscles and length groups.
Creatine and maximum reps, but reps to failure, upper body only, till the veins are like ropes in your face.
Big day, but.
So no, I've never say blasphemous, but. And talk about that kind of shit in the morning. I'm also trying to get up.
And I think, you know, their thing is like they are committed to actual, like, legitimate health and wellness within the South African market. And the marketing manager, he's even directly involved in looking at the sugar content that goes into these things. Because that's the problem with a lot of people's exercise routines. Even though you're gymming and you're working out, there's so much sugar content in the stuff that you're consuming. So it's actually having the reverse effect.
And it's kind of a cliche is not the word, but it's kind of an old idiom in exercise and dieting and that kind of thing that you can't outrun a shit diet. And I mean, there's health benefits, numerous health benefits to exercise that are very important. And obviously with weight loss, it amplifies that. But you could lose 100 kilos never exercising if your diet was fine-tuned enough. Similarly, you could be training like you are 6 days a week, 1 to 3 hours a day. And if you're smashing the pies hard enough, you'll gain weight.
Yeah.
True. So what you put in, what you eat, and your nutritional supplements, you're talking about Biogen and that kind of thing. I mean, that's critical. If you don't get that right as a base, you're fucked.
Yeah. 100%. And I mean, I see it if I have a bit of a loose weekend. You know, I've put on 2 kilos on the Monday.
Sure, that's a horrible feeling. You get on that scale. And you see, I don't even like to weigh myself from this point of view. I got on the scale the other day. I'm 92. Now, that's probably
92 kilograms of handsome.
No. But that's, for me, about 8 kilograms too much.
Well, I don't want to say it, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit porky, so I need to now sort this out.
You always look the same. You don't age. You've got Lego hair. Stop complaining.
No, this is a problem. So everybody feels this. This is what Sharman's so smart about, because by working out that Hobo represents kind of a lot of us, we all have to lose something. We all have to gain something. We all have to try and get ourselves a little bit healthier. I think it's brilliant.
And what's amazing is, like, we'd go to events and people come up to him like, hey, are you Hobo? You know, so he's like, he's kind of created this
becoming a celebrity
following of people that they're like, he's not a celebrity, I can be like that. And the same thing is, like, with that hashtag that you mentioned earlier, like, we're encouraging people to share their journeys, whether they're going to do their first park run or get off the couch and walk the dog, like, whatever your thing is, everyone's got their own journey. And we've got about 600 people that have already submitted images of the stuff they're doing, from going to Comrades or climbing Kilimanjaro or the basic park run kind of thing. And that's what's been exciting, is like, he really has been a foil for a lot of people's issues.
So Hobo, what's it like working with Ben? I mean, we don't know how that feels.
You want the honest answer?
We got enough time, man. Eh? Yeah, 17 minutes. Let's go.
Go on.
Yeah, interesting.
No, don't give me one of those answers. Tell me the truth.
Tough.
Is he a pain in the ass?
He is a pain in the ass, yeah. Right. And so then he gets quite emotional about things. And,
emotional?
On what level?
All sorts of levels.
Emotional?
See, being defensive, Ben, that's emotionalness.
Good point.
How dare you say that I'm emotional?
No, but I mean, look, I can always take criticism.
No one can see this, but he's sitting here with his arms folded, very, very defensive.
The thing about Ben...
elaborate, please.
Ben tries to put on this, like, this facade of being curmudgeonly and was actually a nice oak, and he hates it. He hates the fact that he's actually a nice oak that cares about people and doesn't hate everything. Most things, but not everything.
All right, so you think you're going to maintain this progress after the Ironman?
Yeah, I hope so. So I'm looking at sort of...
As soon as Ben's cameras switch off, you're not going to let yourself go again.
Well, he told me he's going to take a break from me for like a month before we see each other again socially. What happens in that month? Well, who knows?
Well, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Or
I
taking mean, a see, break. That's
like a Facebook status change.
Oh, that's also like the first step. It's like saying, listen, I'm just giving you a heads up about the breakup. I'm not suddenly breaking up with you. I'm breaking up with you later.
It's a gentle breakup.
Is taking a break fat oak speak for I'm going to get fat again?
It's hitting a pie, having a little bit of a relapse.
Do that, Harbo.
But in seriousness, though, like having this goal to do the Ironman, I find, because I mean, my problem, I'm actually quite good at losing weight. I tend to find it again. I've lost, by my tally, 230 kilograms in my life, and I find it in it's a question of how long it takes, and that's pretty soul destroying. And then to get the wherewithal to do it again is something that also you need to build up to. But I have targets. You've got this Ironman thing. I'm trying to do 1 kilo a week or better. Then I'm going to Europe in June, and I want to be 25 to 30 kilos lighter than when I went in January, because that's like – it's a five and a half month period. It's short enough to really feel the comparison. There's no scenario where I start at 170 in January and I'm thin in June.
Yeah.
But I will notice the difference in the seat, right? And then I've got another trip in October, which is to a warm place, and I want to be less hot and sweaty and less hateful of my life. And with
less seatbelt extensions.
That's still going to be a thing for a while. But the idea is 50 to 75 weeks, and I want to try to stay ahead of that pace car. So to just go, if you go, I got to lose 70 kilos, that feels like an impossible goal. But if you're going like, I need to lose one a week, and anything better than one is like super exciting, and I want to be thinner on the plane in 5 months than I was. So like, you've got this half iron man, which is that like a half man who's iron or a man who's half iron?
Stick to the story, Gordon. Okay, so you're doing so well. You had to try and drop a bad joke in there. You're doing so well.
It's my nature, Ben. No one criticizes you for being mean and horrible and shitty and only liking golf. But what else? What else do you have after the man who's half iron? How are you going to keep goal?
So I'm waiting for Mike to actually buy a mountain bike, and then we'll look at entering mountain bike races. I thoroughly enjoy that.
You've already signed up for like Wine to Wales and Bergen Bush. We're doing so. What's been the most exciting thing is like people keep asking that. What happens next? What happens next? And the thing is like he's setting these markers that are consistent needs for actual training. So you can't just like require to. Oh, cool, I've done half Ironman. Now I can just go and just tick along and not train.
Hobbo mentioning now you really like to mountain bike. That's another thing that I think is important, is that you've got to find that bit of exercise that's not exercise for exercise sake. Mm. Obviously now doing the grueling stuff, you said you don't like the road work. That's in service of your goal.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, I love to box. I'm never going to be a competitive fighter, but I thoroughly enjoy it. Yeah, no, absolutely. But you've got to let X know that you're an alpha male, and that requires sometimes backing up your words.
You've got a butt fight.
Yeah, a straight butt fight. But I really enjoy it. Like, it was misery the first month that I went back to boxing after ages away from it, because you can't breathe, you can't move. It's hell. I think if there wasn't such a barrier to entry for exercise that it didn't make you feel worse when you start, everyone would be in good shape. Because after you get past that phase of this is like, please kill me,
once you've had a
you
few
actually
vomits.
Start really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel bad, I need to exercise to feel better. But first, exercising is going to make me feel worse. That's a message people need to get. Like, unless you have some physical limitations, exercise will make you feel great.
Well, it's like rehab for fatness. Like,
so get on a bike.
You go to rehab for drugs and your body wants to die. Like, you have to go through hell in order to recover. Yeah. It's the same with being overweight.
But even just sedentary people who like are, you know, not physically very fit, whatever, don't have necessarily a weight problem, but getting active, like the cardio, your lungs burn. But yeah, the point I was going to get to is if you love mountain biking, embrace that, because finding something that for you is fun is important.
Yeah, if you hate it, it's never going to work.
Unless
all right, so Sharman, how did your book do, dude? It feels like ages ago since you brought it out.
Thanks for bringing that up. It's been pretty awesome.
How's it going?
You know, Rich Mulholland said to me, writing a book is the best business card you'll ever have. And I'm sure you've experienced that as well. It's like...
No, I hated it from beginning to end. But that's...
Writing it is a terrible experience.
No. The reason I'm asking is because I keep bumping into people who are reading it. People who say that they love it. So it's obviously having a massive...
It's all because of your forward that you taught me to spell. Thank you. But you know what's been interesting is like I've also...
He said, please do the forward for me.
F-O-R-W. Do the forward.
That's when I send him a WhatsApp, like, don't hate. Anyway.
I can write good.
And then, you know, it's been interesting. I turned it into an audiobook. So I spent a couple of days narrating it, and then it went live on Amazon and through Audible and a few other sites. And, you know, I mean, it made into like the top 100 new releases on Amazon, which is pretty amazing. And every day on Instagram, I'm posting snippets on hashtag 365 soundbites for startups. And then I'm taking little snippets from the book so people can like have bite-sized information daily around starting a business, the hardships, the up and downs of entrepreneurship life, and then some of the kind of hacks that I've incorporated into this business. And yeah, it's been an exciting journey with Ben and Retroactive in particular.
Well, it's interesting, and I'm glad you're here because Ben never talks about this stuff. So tell me about Retroactive, because this is a new business entirely from what you've been doing up to now.
Sure.
Tell me what the basic idea is, who's involved, because we're not going to find out from Ben. He's trying to prize open a clam.
So, yeah, I mean, we...
I can give you some tips. Oh.
Ben and I have known each other since 2010. In 2011, we went to the New Zealand Rugby World Cup together, and we documented content for MasterCard about witnessing history. And, yeah, Ben and I have always just had a mutual interest in sport. Hobbo and I, we actually lived in the UK because of a superfan competition, and we went and watched cricket and rugby, and we kind of like in my passion.
We actually came to your old radio station.
Yeah,
he was dressed in a mankini.
Yeah. Oh, were you there with him?
Yeah,
Hobber?
I was there with
wow.
him.
Wow, God, so I've known Hobber for a long time too then.
Yeah, it's
tangentially.
Been ages. Right. And Ben and I, about a year and a half ago, we went on this mission. We thought, let's build a tech product where we can analyze brand sponsorships and if they're getting the value and the best value out of it, and what does that look like comparatively with competitors. But then we realized, you know, a lot of marketers, they don't necessarily have the time. You know, it's not always about them being lazy. It's just the fact that they're doing so many things. Mm-hmm. And now editorial rooms have contracted and so many different parts of marketing has downsized because of cost cuts and economic downturns. Mm-hmm. So we realized that wouldn't be a smart play to dump money into a platform that people weren't going to necessarily use. So over the years, Retroviral had kind of touched on some sport elements, and Ben and I were always looking at opportunities to leverage the sport side of things because we feel like too many agencies don't have people that are obsessed over sport.
Right.
So we said, let's take a Retroviral model and roll it into sport. And I was fortunate enough to be at school with a guy called Brian, who happens to be a Rugby World Cup winner.
Habana.
That's right. And Shaga Sasulu and I are in partnership at Retroviral. So we said, let's create this awesome foursome and go out there and see what we can do. And what's been exciting is that all the learnings from Retroviral and almost 9 years of that business, we've kind of just escalated the speed at which we've reduced the headaches for this new startup. And yeah, in our first year, we'll be finished now at the end of June, and we're probably at the level where Retroviral was after 3 years. So it's been a really good, very good.
Nothing beats experience.
Yeah, the great thing is that we've also got like a body of work. Hover's that body. Right there,
Did you ever think that you'd be referred to as a body of work, Hobber?
Hobber basically embodies the kind of things that we want to do as an agency, and seeing him make this progress is like it's so much better than just having work or just doing something because we had an idea. Like, the guy's a living example of an idea and how you can make things happen.
Well, it's all happening on Sunday, the 14th of April. He will be competing in his second Olympic distance triathlon in, of all places, the beautiful town of Germiston.
The bustling metropolis.
Yeah, just wear one of those dust masks because you're Germiston full of
and a hazmat suit.
Filthy people and dreadful things.
It was just Mistin before people went there and made it gross.
Oh, then it became Germ.
Yeah, I got it, but
one of the big remaining events in preparation for the Ironman. Good luck, Hobber.
Thanks,
and also this Saturday, if you actually want to meet Hobber in the flesh, he'll be running up and down the West Cliff stairs like a machine.
From
8 until 10 in the morning. And you can literally come and hang out with Hobber, and you might even get featured in the next episode of the Biogen Journey.
How many stairs? How many times are you doing that?
7,000.
But I mean, obviously
I have no idea.
Obviously, you guys have got your bro dynamics, and it's like it's all in good fun. And Hobber takes a bit of stick and whatever. But and you're saying like Ben's been making you do this and that and the whole thing. But I mean, you no one can do it for you. You've obviously put in some seriously hard yards, and I mean, I know what that's like. And you know, that's you've lost an incredible amount of weight, and like all giving you shit aside, You're a hard bastard, Hobber.
Yeah, thanks. Mm. But I mean, I think it also helps with this whole thing and being filmed. You know, there's people now that are watching and
like you're accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To you know, not only Mike, Ben,
the guys at Biogen, you know, it's people, it's random people.
Yeah. So Polo mates, shout out to the OJ Eagles.
All right, thank you. That's enough fat people stuff for this morning.
I do that as well on Instagram.
Yeah, I just go to there is a website you can see everything about.
Let's go have a fat support group meeting after this without these skinnies. Because what do they know?
I've had enough of you fat.
Half man.
If you go to biogen.co.za/biogen-journey, there's Hobbo in all his glories.
Gareth is fat saturated.
I am.
Faturated.
Not enough. All right, so while we're talking about health, the Understanding Cancer podcast series takes you on a journey, different kind of journey, but relevant to everyone, bringing clarity to the complexity of this disease. It is our final episode, and we're looking at palliative care. Contrary to popular belief, it's associated with end-of-life care only. No, it's actually about a medical approach that improves the quality of life through pain and symptom management at any stage of a cancer journey. You can find out more at 9 a.m. today. And remember, all 10 episodes of this series are available on cliffcentral.com, the Cliff Central app, or wherever you get your podcasts. And because they understand more about it than anyone else, Understanding Cancer is brought to you by Discovery. You see how much information they have on this disease. That's why we thought we'd put this series together with them. They are the world's leading experts in how to treat and deal with it, and you can become an expert too just by listening. All of that is available, as well as some other excellent stuff. You might have missed it the other day. We had Pig Spotter in here, and we're talking about smart driving, where we help you to understand and tackle topics like the auto bill, which really does affect all of us, your rights on the road, and a whole lot more. Amp up your road safety with some simple tips, including ways to avoid hijackings, road rage incidents, and other moments on the road this holiday season and more. Because, of course, April's full of holidays, and a lot of people take to the roads this April. It's famous for its death tolls, which is not something you want to be famous for. But you can find out more by listening to Smart Driving, which is available now on the Cliff Central website. That's powered by King Price Insurance. We will see you tomorrow. Here's the unnews and all the important headlines that you need to hear on cliffcentral.com. It is just about 8 o'clock. All right, so let's go. What, Gord?
Do it in your broadcaster voice, Gareth.
All right, here we go. Okay. The ANC have distanced themselves from protesters that disrupted Peter Louis Myberg's book launch last night.
Oh, no.
The protesters were very angry over the book signing on... I can't do this. Protesters were angry over books shining a light on Ace Magashule's gangster ways and the history of the corruption that he's been involved in. But the ANC said, these are Ace's people paid by Ace. The main disruption budget is being spent on Alexandra right now with an effort to take down the DA on service delivery. Just over a week to go until Game of Thrones comes back for just one last season. Most people still have no idea who's who in the whole story, so get ready for people talking about the bastard banging the hot chick who has the dragons, while the drunk dwarf gets revenge on his sister fucking brother, while a bunch of ice people rise up and try to steal an uncomfortable piece of furniture. That's probably the best synopsis we can give. And it's 50 days until the Cricket World Cup and 50 days until AB de Villiers does something special in England. It's not entirely clear if it will be Protea's colours that he wears on the field of play or a beer drinking contest against Kevin Peterson in the stands after the opening game. But you heard the rumour first here. All right, we will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9 a.m. Be good.
This is CliffCentral.com.